Hi guys, today I'll present to you a talk I had with Dr. E.G. Vallinaros, who literally wrote the book on EPA. The book itself is named Poison Spring, The Secret History of Pollution and the EPA. And in that book, he explains how EPA, or Environment Protection Agency of the US, has been doing everything but protect the environment. So here is the talk. Good morning, Dr. Vallinaros. It is Dr. Vallinaros, right?
Yeah, well, I have a PhD.
All right. Now, the reason of me wanting to talk to you is about your book, Poison Spring, which I have read, and I find it very groundbreaking. I'm calling on, with respect to Canada, where pesticides is as big an issue as USA, maybe little less, maybe little more, but it's following the same pattern, and there is not enough government supervision, not enough independent supervision, and the government institutions seems to accept the documents as provided by the promoters or the makers of the pesticides and GMO and so on. And this is a very long history here. So we are involved in raising awareness on this, and I'm also a little bit of a public speaker, and I intended to talk about your book, which I find very informative, because EPA is being touted by Canadian Health Ministry as they always work with EPA and they always respect the findings and approvals of EPA and all that. They keep harping on that, and then we have this book from you. So this is our background.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your kind words about the book. And as you know, of course, I wrote the book after 25 years of working within the EPA, and I collected my information very carefully. In fact, my colleagues used to voluntarily give me the copies of what they did, and because of that, eventually I wrote the book. And number two, while I was within the government, I noticed there was very little I could do to change the culture of allowing the chemical industry to pretty much run the show. I mean, we're talking about a government that has been captured by the industry, and EPA is simply an example. And the unfortunate part of it, of course, is that EPA is too important to be allowed to be dominated by these outside forces. And it's this influence from the outside coming to the agency through Congress and through the White House and by the chemical industry itself that makes the decision so questionable. And the credibility of science, of course, has been damaged because of the history of fraud in the testing of these chemicals for decades. And now the big question is, do they continue the same practices? And, of course, I cannot answer that question because I don't know what's going on. But what I do know is that the kind of climate of fear and of acceptance of the outside results is still pervasive. And whenever I talk about this, I always end up by suggesting that Americans ought to reject that and redesign the EPA so that it can be an independent organization and not having much to do with the industry. I mean, there should be a wall of protection around the EPA so that the scientists within the government would feel secure and confident that their decisions are based on reliable data. And number two, the EPA, or rather the government of the United States, should create an independent laboratory to test all these chemicals before they get into the market, because the credibility of the industry is pretty much to zero right now. And nobody trusts the industry. If they come up with a study, at least I wouldn't trust them, because of what I have seen. And therefore, we need to have an independent organization to do the testing and to have a reliable report that, in fact, the test represents the data. And then the government agency can make a reliable decision about the reliability of whatever product they are trying to put into the market, and therefore to protect our health and the environment. To me, it's extraordinary importance because the decisions of the EPA, not only at Americans, but they affect, as you put it, Canada. They affect most of the industrialized, most of the world, frankly. I mean, you can see if you study what is happening in the European Union, it's much what's happening in America. They keep talking about the EPA registration and so on, and they are influenced, of course, and they assume that if EPA has approved something, it's pretty much secure, and therefore they do the same thing for their country. So it's we need to reform this place. We need to shed light on the workings of the place, of the agency, and to keep the industry away from what the government, what this government agency is doing. And I hope that with speaking about it as you do in Canada and speaking about this as I am in the United States, we might have an impact. And what I'm also telling people is that this is 52 years after Rachel Carson. And Rachel Carson wrote that wonderful book, Silent Spring, in 1962. And we are now in 2014. So there should be no need for anybody to restate the problem. You know, and the difference with me, of course, is that I use inside information to pretty much explain why the system is so corrupt. Otherwise, you cannot even ask a question if you don't know this history. So I urge other people also to take a look at this book and read it carefully so that they can decide on their own what they want to do with their lives. I gave a talk last night at Clermont, and fortunately we have C-SPAN Book TV so that my presentation will be broadcast for the whole country to see. And so I'm hopeful.
Oh, where is it going to be broadcast?
In the United States, and I will let you know when, but this is C-SPAN Book TV is a national network of television that broadcasts in this country, and probably, I don't know, its broadcast may be picked up in Canada without any advertisement. It's funded, it's been funded by the members of the industry, pretty much. But it's independent of the industry, and it broadcasts usually a book team. People who talk about their books on Saturday and Sunday, and the rest of the week, they broadcast things that take place in the executive branch and in Congress. It's a wonderful television. In fact, I think it's the best television network in this country.
Very good. Excellent. I have a few... Yeah, go on.
So I was delighted that they came last night and they televised the whole one-hour discussion and presentation I made, and they will broadcast it to the whole country and we'll see the reaction. I do whatever I can. I can talk to two people, I can talk to 500 people. So if there is a chance in Canada that I can be invited to talk in a big crowd or a small crowd, whatever it is, I'll be happy to consider that. And I am very grateful to you for having read the book and also talking about it whenever you also make your own presentations in Canada.
Oh, that's wonderful. I have a few follow-up questions. I know your book does not cover GMO too much. It does cover parsing reference to it here and there, but it does...
Yes, you're right, yes.
So it does make passing reference, but it does include many of the pesticides that go with the GMO, which even for us is a major concern. In fact, many of us believe the pesticides, if one has to choose which is the biggest devil, then sometimes the pesticide is even more harmful than the GMO because it is being used even on non-GM crop, it is being used everywhere.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you mentioned 2,4-D, which is coming up as a agricultural pesticide for GMO and for non-GMO. You also mentioned glyphosate. Do you have any follow-up on your opinion of if one has to choose which is the number one toxin that should be removed from agriculture? From forestry, glyphosate is being used in Canada even on forestry, for instance, for logging companies or even on waterways for weed management and so on. I believe same thing is happening in USA as well. So can you tell us any idea if we have to choose on one to fight because we cannot fight 500 at the same time, which one should one choose?
I would want to get rid of both of them because they have a nasty history. I mean, after all, 2,4-D is connected with the Agent Orange, and both of these substances were used as a chemical warfare weapon in the Vietnam War, and both of them were contaminated by dioxins. So it seems to me 2,4-D survived only because of political considerations. When EPA banned 2,4-5-T in 1983, they probably without our knowledge, they made an agreement with the Dow Chemical not to touch 2,4-D, because 2,4-D was so popular and continues to be very popular in agriculture. And as far as glyphosate or Roundup, I mean, this has been used for decades, and there are some scientists who argue that they might actually destroy American agriculture. So I definitely don't think that we should be dealing with this kind of extremely toxic ingredients or substances in our environment. I'm in touch with a group of women in the United States called Women Across America, and they have discovered that glyphosate has been in their breast milk. Think it for a second. In mother's breast milk to find this toxic stuff? How is the mother going to feed or to breastfeed her baby if she knows that she's going to poison the baby? I mean, this is extraordinary. So I would definitely reject both of them. Now, to do that, of course, you need, there is science. I mean, this is not, I'm not saying anything that scientists don't know. This stuff has been shown to be very toxic to a number, in a number of ways, to a number of organisms, and probably to humans. And now you find it in mother's milk. And the, you know, the glyphosate, we know that in the soil, for instance, it kills the very microorganisms that we need to pass the good stuff into the roots of the plants in order to have a good nutrition. In other words, nutrients like iron, like tin, and I mean other nutrients that become the substance or the nutrition substance of what we eat. And then apparently the same chemical in the gut of the human is causing problems with the very absorption by the gut of the nutrients that we need to be healthy. So clearly, I'm not a toxicologist, but the literature is out there, and it tells us that this stuff is very toxic. So why are we keeping it on? And this is the question that Americans face, the Canadians face, and all civilized societies ought to face one day and say enough is enough. After all, we have organic farming that produces good quality food without a drop of this synthetic stuff. So why are we stuck with synthetic petrochemicals? That's the question I ask. And the only answer is a political one. The chemicals are used not necessarily to kill weeds or to kill insects. They are used in order to keep the small empires at the hands of very few people. That's my bias answer to the question why we are still hooked with these very toxic chemicals.
Do you have any suggestion for Canadians on this very important issue of the day?
Yes, I'll tell them what exactly I tell Americans. Number one, start eating organic food if you don't. By eating organic food, you avoid genetically engineered, you avoid sludge, you avoid radiation, you avoid any of the synthetic chemicals, number one. So once you do that to yourself and to your family, then begin to talk to other people and organize, join environmental groups, and begin to question the actions of government and industry. And try to, if you have an agency that is protecting your environment, try to disrupt the influence of the industry. That's what I would say to them.
And there you have it, gentlemen. E.G. Vallionados, the writer of the book Poison Spring, on what he thinks of EPA, what he thinks about these poisons getting into our environment, and what you and I should consider doing about it. So that's all for today. Talk to you next time. Bye.